Hard Labour's Stolen Wages is the name of a report that details the extent of the misappropriation and theft of the wages of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander workers throughout white settlement in Australia. The research was carried out by Dr. Rosalind Kidd, who's been researching in this area for over a decade, and this report expands on some of her previous findings. Queensland Democrat Senator Andrew Bartlett says the Democrats will continue to push for recognition and compensation for those affected, and he joins me this morning. Good morning, Andrew.
Yeah, good morning.
And why has it taken so long for this issue to gather momentum?
Well, I think it's one of those ones where it just hasn't been acknowledged. I think, like a lot of things in regard to the way Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Australians have been treated over the decades and centuries, there's just been an unwillingness to acknowledge the specific nature of that treatment and the extent of that treatment. So, and particularly in this case, where a lot of the malfeasance, if you like, was done by governments over the years. Obviously, they've got an interest in not broadcasting that, or not even examining themselves what's happened. And I guess what's important about this report, and I really would urge people to get online through the ANTAR website and have a look at it. It's put together by Dr. Rosalind Kidd, and this all started from her PhD research over 10 years ago as a historian going through the archives in Queensland. And it wasn't until she got access to these archives and dug through, and I don't think the state government at the time had much idea about what she'd be finding or the extent of what she'd find, and wasn't really till she did all that work that she discovered the extent of the fraud and the misappropriation and the theft. And from that time on, it's really been a matter of trying to make people aware of it, getting governments to acknowledge and admit it, and then getting them to do something about it, which is the harder bit again, and having to redo that in every state where the treatment of Indigenous Australians was quite different. There were a lot of similarities, but the legal structures were quite different from state to state. Of course, it wasn't until the 1967 referendum that there was any direct Commonwealth responsibility for Indigenous people except in the Northern Territory. So it was very much a state-level policy and quite a lot of variance there. So that means, digging out the facts in each area and, of course, digging out facts that governments aren't always that keen for people to uncover.
Well, you talk about the extent and the nature of it, and looking back, I just had a look on the report to see what had been going on in Western Australia, and they specifically mentioned the sealing, the whaling and the pearling industries as examples of where some of these practices were going on. But can you give us a bit of an idea of what kinds of things were happening? What was happening to the money, and what kinds of promises were being made to the Aborigines about their wages?
Well, in broad terms, and to emphasise it is different in different states, but in broad terms, a lot of Aboriginal people's wages, where they were employed, were kept in trust, sometimes literally in a legal sense and sometimes in a more informal sense, by employers or in some states by a government fund or trust, and that was meant to be held on their behalf to be used for their benefit and able to be accessed by them down the track. And in many cases, basically, it's just a matter of them earning wages. The wages didn't go to them. They went to somebody else, and they either never saw them or only were given part of it. And in very simple terms, and this certainly happened in many parts of the pastoral industry right across the northern parts of Australia, WA, the territory in Queensland, of pastoral companies, where it's quite openly stated that the only way they were viable was through their Aboriginal labour, where the Aboriginal workers would firstly get less wages to start with than non-Indigenous workers, but would then have that, they would just be paid in rations, the money would be kept by the employer, and it would be used to buy food for the workers and their families, and the rest just kept for the employer, and they might dole out a bit of pocket money now and then. Some did the right thing and kept it all and provided it when people finished employment. Others did the wrong thing and basically just kept it all or misused it. From the government side of things, similar things happened. The money was kept and only parts was repaid, or it was used to replace other normal revenue, and particularly with once federal payments like child endowment or even war service payments and other sorts of things were made available to Aboriginal people. In many cases, that would go straight from the federal government to state government institution or another institution like a church-run mission, and they would use those funds that were the legal entitlements, the endowment, the allowances of the Indigenous people. Those organisations would use those funds themselves to cover their running costs or to replace, in government's cases, to use those funds and divert public revenue elsewhere.
Mm. When you think of this economic shackling and it's slavery, really, in the context of the Stolen Generation as well, the double injustice is absolutely sickening.
It is, and it is why I think it's very important for people to read these reports, because it's one thing to hear someone like me talk about this as a general fact, and it is a fact, and it's certainly been quite openly acknowledged by the Queensland Government and the New South Wales Government, for starters, although the Queensland Government's response to it has been pathetic. But to actually read the personal stories, to bring it down to seeing individual families and what happened to them, and to imagine that happening to your own children or to your own parents, and of course there are still people alive today where this was done to them, and there's many thousands of Indigenous people where their parents, this was done to them, and that isn't just the injustice of them not receiving their lawful entitlements, it means that they're kept in entrenched poverty and intergenerational poverty, where their children then don't have the benefit of that income, those resources, the opportunity to build up an asset base that many of the rest of us get through, inheriting from our parents. So it's a key part, particularly when you combine it with the Stolen Generations, the destruction of families, the removal of people from their land, from their kinship groups, and all of the other more direct abuse that occurred. It's a key reason why so many of the problems of today exist, both the social dysfunction and the poverty. And it's a reminder that you can't deal with the reality of today without recognising how we got there. And that's not blaming the past or always looking in the rearview mirror, as it's sometimes dismissed by governments. It's trying to have an informed view about the present. Mm. Figure out how best to go into the future.
I'm speaking with Queensland Democrat Senator Andrew Bartlett on the Hard Labour Stolen Wages Report. Andrew, knowing the history of mistreatment of Aborigines as you do, what do you make of the recent federal intervention?
Well, the federal intervention in the Northern Territory, I think, is a very, very dangerous example of the likelihood of repeating the mistakes of the past, and it is based on, I think, a refusal to acknowledge the reality of the past, including stolen wages and stolen generations and all of those things. I mean, we've had now on the record in the federal parliament a number of coalition MPs talking openly about these being paternalistic measures, and that's a good thing because paternalism is what's needed and we shouldn't be politically correct, etc., etc. And look, I'm all for evidence-based outcomes and practical results, and whilst principles are important, practical results and improvement is even more important. But on all counts, the evidence shows paternalism doesn't work. It's failed drastically. And all of these sorts of things, again, including stolen wages, were cases where governments and, in some cases, employers decided that they knew what was best for Indigenous people and basically just did what they wanted to do, sometimes with good intentions, at least initially, and over time, continually just keep telling yourselves, oh, well, this is for the best, this is for the best, we know what's best. They don't. They're not capable. We're the only ones that can fix this, all these sorts of things. It's just such a repeat in so many ways, but particularly in terms of the attitudes. I'm not saying that everything that's being done in the Territory is a repeat in terms of the specific policy actions, but in terms of the mindset of those in government, that we know what's best and we will have to take control and impose what's best on these people, is some absolute carbon copy. And some of the statements made in the federal parliament during the debate on the Northern Territory intervention, you could cut and paste straight out of parliamentary debates from 100 years ago. And the same things were said when they were bringing in the protectors, when they were putting in place these, putting wages in trust, so to speak, and doing all the child removals. Just so much similarity, it's quite scary, frankly. Mm.
Okay, have you had some time to think about what changes and in what order the changes need to be made so that this issue can be best repaired and then Indigenous communities can move forward with their own governance?
Well, the biggest thing that needs to be made is to hear more directly from Indigenous Australians, and that's a diversity of views, of course, and some of them do support key aspects of the Northern Territory intervention. It's never as, it's not as black and white, if you'll pardon the expression, as it's sometimes portrayed, but it's got to be, and this is just bounteous evidence to demonstrate this. It just has to involve and be controlled by Indigenous people at community level over the long term. If that doesn't happen, it just cannot work. It's laughable to think that suddenly now white Australia has figured out the solution for Indigenous Australians on their behalf and impose it upon them when we have failed so dramatically and so comprehensively in this area, far more than any other area. I mean, we've done pretty well in many areas as a nation, but this is one area where our failure is comprehensive, total and absolute, across the political spectrum, across all levels of government, across all aspects of our society. It's because we don't listen enough to Indigenous peoples, and the understanding levels are so poor. And this stolen wages example is just another case of that happening. And even when we know it's happened, and I guess this is what's so frustrating, we know it's happened. With governments now, including the Territory, saying, oh, we've got to, tell Aboriginal people how to run their organisations because their governance standards are so poor and all these sorts of things. When you have a monumental multi-billion dollar fraud perpetrated by a range of governments around the country, in some cases openly acknowledged, to use the Queensland example, probably $500 million, clearly acknowledged by the state government, and then just go, oh, well, too hard, too late now, give you $50 million just to, as a gesture of reconciliation, to use their term. Now let's move forward. I mean, how can a government tell people you've got to, improve your standards of governance when those people know that this government and, federal government is complicit in some of these things, not the current one, but, the government in general over decades, complicit in monumental misappropriation and poor governance, and they just expect people to look the other way. I mean, resolving these things is a key part of being able to properly move forward, and I just think that's not anything mysterious about lack of understanding between Indigenous and non-Indigenous Australia. That's the basic common sense understanding of human nature. You've completely perpetrated monumental injustices and disruption and dislocation and on whole groups of people over decades and decades, and then just tell them, I'll get over it, move on, and in many cases look like you're going to do the same things to them again. It's hard to find the words to describe the frustration, and that we are repeating the same mistakes again. And that doesn't mean that everything that's being done in the Territory is going to fail, but it does mean that large parts of it are, and the opportunity for addressing these entrenched problems is being at risk of being lost once again.
Well, hopefully this report will be the beginning of a lot more public recognition of that particular situation, and hopefully we'll take it on as an issue much more than we have done in the past, and really testimony to the strength and resilience of the Aboriginal people that they've survived what has been and still is being served up to them. Andrew Bartlett, thank you very much for your time on RTRFM this morning.
Good to talk to you.